Hey everybody, welcome to the 56th episode of the JDO Show. I am your host, J. David Osborne, a.k.a. Mr. Bichon Frise, and I gotta be honest with you today, I'm in a fucking bad mood. I don't know what's wrong with me. I just woke up in a pissy mood. I'm sitting here in this chair in a pissy mood. I wish I wasn't. Maybe I'm gonna do some push-ups or something. I don't know. Maybe I'll, like, bash my head into this desk. That sounds like a really... I think if I broke something with my head, I feel like I might feel better. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I've been doing really well staying away from social media. And so this might just be like, there might have been a deep well of rage kind of churning, kind of like the river of slime in Ghostbusters 2, but in my heart. And I went on Facebook this morning and it's just like, it all started to like just bubble up. So maybe I was getting a slow simmering rage every time I was going on it. And now that I'm not, because I have these fucking kick-ass apps to keep me from going on it. Maybe now maybe it's just all coming to the surface, and it's forcing me to actually deal with the deep-seated rage that's actually inside of me. I don't know. It could be that. Could be other things, too. Today on the podcast, I have Danger Slater. We talked a lot of shit. It was a lot of fun. He's a funny dude, and he's a good writer, too. So that's a good combination. I hope you enjoy our conversation. I know at least once I say the phrase crush puss on Tinder, which I'm really proud of. Really proud of pretty much everything I say in this episode. Stand by it. So be prepared to laugh and have a good time. I hope you enjoy it. Bye. So hey, thanks for coming on the podcast, man.
Yeah, no problem.
So how's things?
Are you recording? Were you recording right now?
I started as soon as I said, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, okay.
That's normally, that's the starting point. That's where we just take off and provide fucking excellent content for the listeners.
You know, I do listen to the show on a pretty regular basis.
Oh,
so cool. I'm very familiar with the format. The thing is, like, I started listening, when you were interviewing like people that I know personally or like people whose work I really like, but I kind of just enjoyed the like, you know, conversational aspect of the show. I started going back and listening to the other ones too, of people I'm like, wasn't familiar with.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So you find some new stuff to read maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little nervous about actually being on the show, 'cause all your guests are so like smart and have such interesting things to say, and I'm like just some dude who's just like, I don't know, you know.
Hey man, that's me dude. It'll be like talking to myself in a sense, like that's kind of how I often feel positioned with them. I'm like, all right, cool, you know. It's like having like, you know, Brian Evanson on or something, like, or like Juliet Escoria, who's just like, you know how like some people are smart but it's like intimidating.
Yeah.
And I'll just be like, okay, cool. So my goal for the podcast today is to just not say anything fucking stupid. And so if I have like a dumb thought sometimes, I'm just going to stay quiet. Hopefully they'll keep talking, move past that, so that I don't have to be like, well, yeah, what about like chemtrails or some shit like that? You know what I mean?
It's you, man. You're always trying to steer the conversation back to chemtrails.
I know. Well, I mean, I just think the government needs to be honest with us. That's all. So how have you been, man? I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah, I've been pretty good. I've been working a lot, and by a lot, I mean not a lot, but every day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, is this working like a job, or are you talking about writing work?
Well, I do both every day, but I don't know, the past couple of months have just felt like the same thing every single day, and it's not bad because I'm like really being really productive with that time, but at the same time, there's part of me that just wants, man, I just want to get in a car and drive 6 hours and then see where that goes, you know,
right,
or like
right.
Just go to some city I've never been to or just do something.
Now, before you came to Portland and settled down, as it were, with Lisa and everything, like did you do that a lot? Were you kind of like a wandering youth?
Well, not really. There was like when I did, yeah, I grew up in New Jersey. I'm gonna probably about 30 miles outside of the city, outside of New York. just to geographically place it. So like Northeast New Jersey. And there's a lot of stuff in that area that's all very close, and it's all very, very interesting, but also like very close. So there's not, people don't really like go that far away from there. Like, you know, if you're like, oh, I want to do something, you just go into the city because the version of whatever you want, unless it's like, you know, go look at trees or something, but the version of whatever you want to do is probably there, probably like one of the best versions of it. You know, I want to go see a play. Well, here's Broadway, you know, like,
yeah. No, that, so, that makes a lot of sense. And that's one of the things, I think I've heard that before, where it's kind of like the stereotype where people from New York, and I guess in the, you know, surrounding areas, if New York is close to you, you just, you don't understand that there are other cities in the world.
Oh, man. The first time I went through a city, I was like in my 20s, right? Like, and I'm going through, I mean, I've been to other cities before, but like, you know, someone's like, I'm visiting someone in like Baltimore, and there's like houses.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh yeah, yeah, this is Baltimore. I'm like, yeah, but there's houses, like, and they have yards. What the hell are you talking about? This isn't a city. Right. You know, like, I'm like, we're in the suburbs, right? And he's like, no, this is the city. I'm like, what?
No,
because like, yeah, you don't like get too many yards like in New York.
Well, I went to when I went to New York to house sit for Scott Adlerberg, I was in Brooklyn. I was in Bed-Stuy, and so he runs an Airbnb there. And when I first showed up, you know, it's kind of a 3-story. What the hell do you call those things? A townhouse, maybe? I don't really know. But anyway, so he's showing me around and stuff, and he's like, and then let's show you where you'll be staying. And, you know, it's literally like a basement, you know, it's underground, and there's like a bed and a TV, and the ceiling is very low. And I'm not a particularly claustrophobic person, but, you know, man, I grew up in Oklahoma, right? So when I walk out of my house, I would see, you know, big open sky. You know, it's like a town of maybe, I grew up in a town of like 80,000 people. So I was very, very used to like having, and I think that that's just kind of imprinted in my brain. So when I like went from that and I was like, okay, I'm going to get outside and get some fresh air. Nah, bitch, that's not how that shit works. Like you walk out and it's nothing but, and people are shouting at each other and there's like trash all over the street. And, yeah. And I was just like, it took me about, man, I would say about 4 or 5 days to acclimate to that because it was just so radically different from what I was used to.
Yeah, I mean, they even have a Tumblr that's like the apartments of Williamsburg or something, and it's just all these like apartments that people are paying like $2,000 a month for, and it's one room with no windows, and the ceiling's only 6 feet tall, and you know, there's like an exposed pipe in the corner and shit, and it's just like. It's just like wherever you could stick a person. I mean, there's really no place else to go when you got 8 million people in like something that's only, I don't know, 10 miles big, you know, like you kind of just got to stick them in every little friggin' cranny you can find.
It's so bizarre too, because I understand why people go to New York, and it's because, you know, I mean, like there's a lot of opportunities there, obviously. But I don't understand what career you could possibly want to have in order to live like that. Well, I guess, I mean, I don't mean to disparage New York, obviously. Like, it's a fucking, once I acclimated, it was really cool, and I got a really neat experience with it. But I don't know if the trade-off is worth it, you know? I think I would rather just be unknown and, you know, have some space, right?
Yeah, but the thing is, the only people that, like, I mean, not the only people that live there, but like a lot of the people that move to New York they're only there in their 20s because they get some, like, they're out of college and they got some job as like an investment banker or something, and then they get some apartment and they live there until they meet a girl and want to have a guy and they want to have a kid, and they have to like leave. they all go to Jersey then.
right. Okay, yeah, right. I actually have a friend, Angel, who I think did exactly that. I think he got married, had a kid, and he moved to Jersey because he was originally from the Bronx. And so yeah, that's so basically what you're saying is like Jersey's more like the burbs.
Essentially Jersey, the entire state is either a suburb of New York City or Philadelphia.
Oh, okay, right on. So it's this liminal space then. It's this in-between world
Yeah,
of
well, and there's a river, right, that cuts through Jersey, and it's almost like two different states. Like, these people don't mix, they're just like two, and Lisa's just like, she's like, your state's the size of like a postage stamp. How is that like a thing? And I'm just like, I don't know.
Right. So basically, how long ago did you move here?
Almost 2 years ago now.
Okay, and by the way, for anyone listening, here means Portland. Yeah, no, I think I'm going on year three here. So have you pretty much well adjusted to it? Do you like it?
It took a minute to get used to like strangers like smiling at me and talking to me. But because people do that around here, you kind of get like this people are like laid back. It's the West Coast, and I was very my last job before I left New Jersey was driving for a courier company, and I spend my day going up and down the turnpike and into New York and Brooklyn stuff to pick up dirt and water samples for this environmental lab, and which w was like super busy all the time because New Jersey's like c covered in fucking oil spills and toxic waste and all this other bullshit from
Oh,
the cities. And
nice.
yeah, they're like, I had to take this OSHA class, and the teacher or the of the OSHA class was like, yeah, New Jersey's got more Superfund sites than any other state in the country. And Superfund.
Super fun. Oh, I thought super fun. I'm like, oh, rad. That's a neat thing to call like an oil slick. It's like, hey, we got a super fun over here. If you just name everything, it's like if like birds get stuck in the oil. It's like, oh, it's a bounce castle. We got a bounce castle out here. Just put nice names on things.
Dude, for the longest time, I thought they were saying super fun, and I was like, I'm like sitting there like fucking government naming things that trying to make it sound like it's not so bad, like.
It's funny. It wouldn't be too far out of that though, for real. It's funny you mentioned that people smile and stuff here. It must be on a continuum, man, because in the South, like everybody is super friendly, and I don't know where that comes from. I think it's probably the lack of people. You feel like you have to know your neighbors, and you have to kind of know everybody around you. And so in Oklahoma, I mean, people actually, when you're walking, people actually stop and talk, and everybody, it's like smiling. If you don't smile at somebody on the street, it's kind of like, what the fuck is this guy's problem? And say like, how are you doing? And so when I moved here, it's so funny, man, because you moved from this hyper urban, nobody talks to anybody environment to Portland, and you're like, everybody here's so friendly. And I moved from rural Oklahoma to this point, and I'm like, man, people here are fucking assholes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it really is a matter of perspective. The first time I was walking down the street, I had been here for about a week, and this girl was coming out of a 7-Eleven that I was walking by, and she's like, "Hey, how are you?" And I'm just like, "Hey," and we just kept walking, and I was like, does this girl want to fuck me? Like, what the fuck was that? And then I went home and I was telling Lisa, I'm like, some girl was hitting on me at the 7-Eleven. She's like, what? What the hell happened? And I'm like, oh, she just was like smiling, and she said, hey, and like, walking by. And she's like, dude, she was not hitting on you. She was just saying hi. And then I got really weirded out. I'm like, why? Like, why was she doing that? And she's like, I don't know. And I'm like, no, that's weird. Like, why the hell was she talking to me then? And it was just like,
That's so
yeah,
funny, man. That's such like dude behavior too. You know what I mean? Like I've done that before so many times where somebody will just be nice and I'll be like, yeah, I know what's up. And it's so gross because it's like, no, dude, like people aren't walking around like being like, man, would love to get a piece of that. If people even say that anymore, I don't know. I've been out of the game so long. Like people use fucking like Tinder now, which I'm kind of fascinated by, and I'm like, oh man, back when I was a single guy, like that would have been kind of cool to experiment with, but It's just like kind of crazy too, because I see that kind of shit and I'm like, you know when you look at something and you're like, there's no way that's healthy, but you also don't want to be a dick about it.
Right.
Like that's kind of how I see Tinder in general. Like whenever I see people, I'm like, you're literally just like going flipping through a catalog of people you can fuck. Like there's no way that's psychologically healthy.
Oh yeah, and then there's no like, I mean, it's not like OkCupid where you can even like they have like five questions that you answer. So there's like a tiny bit of personality involved.
Yeah,
I had that.
I had that. I had OkCupid back in the day.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like, I mean, and OkCupid kind of changed their model to like do that same thing where you could just kind of do like hot or not on people, you know, like swiping left or right.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, yeah, to me, it's just kind of, it's, I mean, I don't really, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't really care, you know, I mean, do whatever you want, but I don't know, man. I feel like there's a lot of like, you know, leave people alone and let people do whatever they want. But it's also sort of gotten to the point where it's like, yeah, but some of this just seems like super, super unhealthy. A lot of like Twitter stuff too, you know, where if I ever, you know, complain about social media, people are like, let's just let people do what they want. And I'm like, yeah, but does anybody else think that this just doesn't seem productive or healthy? That's probably just the internet though.
Well, I mean, people arguing on Twitter, I think it's like people argue on Twitter and it's like, what are you doing? You only get 160 characters. Like, I mean, it's just basically all you could say to somebody is like, hey, fuck you, you know, like, and you're running out of space. Like, it's not like you can set up some sort of compelling argument unless you want to do like 15 tweets in a row. And then you got to number them so people like know which order to read your stupid tweets in.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I love Twitter because I like to just like make jokes and read jokes. And it's like really nice. It really makes you kind of like think about your words and choosing them right, because you only have this limited amount of space. But at the same time, like, I'm not there to like, you know, go on tirades. Like, I don't know, it's fucking not good. Twitter itself is not good for that. And I mean, I don't know, people use it like that though. But
yeah, no, for sure. And I think the thing is that, number one, like, you're totally right, like Twitter is great for joke writing. I try to follow just strictly people that I think are funny, but even the funny people will dip it, because, okay, so it's good for joke writing, but it's also good for just like insane negativity, right? Because if you have 140 characters, you can do snark, because that's what snark is. Like, snark is right. Basically like going like, you know?
Yeah.
So you can do that really well, but you can't take 140 characters and be positive, because you sound like a fucking crazy person, because you don't get to elaborate. So you just have, like, if you were doing positivity in 140 characters, it would be, the sun is shining, I think today is beautiful. And everybody would be like, what the fuck is wrong with this dude? like, you can't really do it. And so Twitter, I guess, kind of positioned itself as a news website. And the news is all bad, obviously. And you just have these people who have appointed themselves up-to-the-date, you know, commentators on every news item that comes down the pipeline. And that's totally fine. I mean, there are some people who do that, who get paid to do that, and it's like, okay, cool, you know. But then it trickles down to people who see that and kind of emulate that behavior. And it'll just be like a buddy of mine from Oklahoma or, an author, for example, and the author is just posting nothing but like Donald Trump stuff and Russia and everything. And I'm just like, shouldn't you be like, I don't know, writing a book or something? I don't know. That seems like that's more your job, not being a news commentator, but.
Right. Or like, even, I mean, even if it's like not, you know, your job, but like, is that person just walking around all day in their life just like talking about Russia and Donald Trump and shit? Like, I'm fucking, I mean, you know, I'll make jokes and shit about Donald Trump or whoever is fucking the president or whoever is in the news, but like, you know, it's not like I'm walking around all day spending my time thinking about fucking Donald Trump. Like, who gives a shit?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, until he does something that, you know, now we can comment on that. And I guess he's doing something all the time, but I don't know, man. Like, there's just 100 other things in the world going on that I could talk about, you know, as well.
Yeah, no, and I think that's the thing too. And I think people immediately forget that these kind of news cycles in general are bad from the top down or from the bottom up, whichever way you want to look at it, because they're definitely putting this information into I mean, everybody forgets that there's such a thing as a 24-hour news cycle when it's news that they want to hear. So if it's consistent bad stuff about Donald Trump, it's like the media has you fucking hooked, right? Because
Right.
when it's Obama and, you see ridiculous stories, everybody will be like, oh my God, the 24-hour news cycle won't stop covering this. Why does the news media keep covering this bullshit stuff about Obama being a Muslim? This is a deep cut from years ago for people who've already forgotten about that. But it's like, oh my God, I can't believe that the 24-hour news cycle is still doing this. And then, now all of a sudden it's bullshit about, of course Trump is wasting money at Mar-a-Lago, and of course he's cutting programs that are important. And it's just like, yeah, but again, who cares? Like when I see things, and I know this will probably get me like a shitload of hate, but when I see like the National Endowment for the Arts getting cut, this sounds terrible, but I'm like, okay, whatever. I don't think anything I really like is benefits from the National Endowment. It's like, oh man, some rich white quote unquote genius, will get that. Or maybe not. Maybe I'm not being fair. Maybe it goes to other people too. But I was like, okay, I don't care. That literally doesn't affect my life. I'm self-publishing my books on CreateSpace. I don't give a shit about the National Endowment for the Arts,
I think it's more like, I think people are getting not upset that it's specifically that, though. It's more like the mentality of of the person doing it, of Donald Trump, or the mentality of the people who would be backing him,
Well, yeah, no,
So
and yeah,
I
so
think
yeah.
that's what people are reacting to. Not necessarily that, because yeah, like I mean, how many people are sitting around watching fucking Masterpiece Theater and shit? Like
Right.
nobody is watching that. Like but it's like, well, if they start cutting, PBS, then what, when does it start to matter? Like, when does it get to something that is going to actually affect me in my life?
Well, what do you think? What do you think would affect your life? What can you think, like hypothetically, of a news article that you might see where you're like, oh shit, it's coming home.
No.
Exactly. 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 That is exactly my point. That is exactly my point.
I have the quote unquote privileged position of being a guy and white, and so I don't have to worry about things like, well, I mean, I do worry about them, but I don't personally have to have like if abortion was legal or illegal, it doesn't really affect me personally because I can't have children.
Right.
So
Right. That
that's why.
makes sense. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, I didn't think about it that way.
I mean, it would affect me in so much as if some girl I hooked up with got pregnant, I'd be like, we need to,
You need to drink this like milk of magnesia, whatever the fuck. Not milk of magnesia is actually good for you. What the hell am I talking about? Whatever the potions are that they would drink,
Milk magnesia. I
That's
don't
a thing, right? I didn't make that up.
know. It sounds like a thing.
But well, first of all, I'm glad to hear that you're white because you look a little like ethnically ambiguous to me at times, and it made me uneasy. So I'm glad to hear that I'm talking to a white guy. No, I'm kidding, of course. But
I would, you know what? Like, here's, it's weird because I'm like Italian, like, well, Southern Italian, so like kind of that Sicilian Mediterranean thing going on.
sure.
But I would consider myself white because, I'm a white guy, but like the town I grew up in is like all Italians. Like it's this little lake town in
Yeah.
Jersey. It's called Hopatcong, but 100 years ago, like the town's only 100 years old. It used to be there, but it wasn't called Hopatcong. 100 years ago, it was called Little Brooklyn. And
Whoa.
like so, and I, people have moved and come and gone, but the ethnic majority of this town is just like all Italians.
That's so interesting. Like having an ethnic, I guess the closest I came to that was living in El Paso. Or I guess, any other place I've lived in where Oklahoma is mostly white. So I guess there's that too, but you don't really notice it when it's, You know, that kind of, it's kind of like looking at what, like a loaf of white bread. Like that's what the people are in Oklahoma. It's just, I don't know. It's just kind of like there's nothing like exciting about that. But when I moved to El Paso, I fucking loved it, man. It's something like 85% Hispanic, and I was like, this is fucking cool. There's like culture, and then of course my white tendencies kicked in, and I was like, how can I steal from this? I have to. But no, yeah, I mean, I think that the abortion argument is a really, really good one, and it's something that I totally understand, and I think that, you know, I think once you move into things like maybe human rights, that's where it gets a little bit like we should probably pay attention. But again, like there's only so much, you know? It's like how
Well,
much. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
no, I was gonna say, like, I mean, everyone can care about these things, but like, I don't know, the way that Twitter or Facebook is set up, it's like everyone feels like they are like the truth when it comes to whatever their fucking opinion is, and they feel the need to like get up and start screaming it until everyone's listening. And it's like, I know you have like better things to offer the world than just this, like just your opinion on like whatever fucking Brexit's doing or whatever that is. You know, like I know there's more to you than this, and I know you have like more interesting things going on, and it's like why spend all your time like just arguing? Because no matter if you're gonna post something like that, of course you're gonna get someone dissenting to come in and be like, oh well, actually this or this, you know, and then it's gonna just turn into devolve into this fucking argument, and it's like, oh, you just spend an hour of your time doing nothing.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. That's absolutely. So yes, I mean, I guess just I have this fucking silly notion that if everybody picked like two or three causes, like if there was a database, I always like picture in this like sci-fi concept, if there was like a database of grievances, right? Or of issues that needed to be fixed, and so pretty close to near the top, you have like ice caps melting, climate change type stuff. And then sort of below that you have, because to my mind that kind of actually does come before almost everything else, because that's like human extinction level shit, right? So that's
Right.
it kind of puts everything else like on the back burner for a second. And then below that, you know, you have human rights and things like that. It'd be cool if that was then broken up into subcategories of different organizations that had been vetted and that were specifically targeted at helping that. And then you could basically enter your name into that database and they could position you where they needed help the most, whether it was volunteer or financial or what have you. Like, you could basically be like, okay, you know, we have plenty of people over here who are focusing on Donald Trump and his bad spending, right? Or whatever the fuck he's doing, being a fuck, whatever. And, but over here, you know, we have a community cleanup. Like, somebody used to come through and clean the fucking park. Right, because it's got shit everywhere, and then it's like, so you just get slotted into that. I feel like if I had the ability to make an app, I could make like a fucking $1 billion off of that shit.
I mean, it's a good idea. You're talking about all like volunteer though, right? You're like, if you're gonna sit there and talk about something, like here, you need to actually do something, and here's
Hold
like.
on 1 second. I'm sorry. A fly just came in, and my dog is chasing it around and it's fucking up my audio. I will be right. I will literally be right back. I just gotta get this fly out of here. Hold that thought. Hey, stop. Stop chasing stuff. It's just a fly, fool. Hey, cut it out. Get up. Lay down. Just chill. Hello? Oh, sorry. Continue.
You're gonna have to. I know you said hold that thought, but I didn't.
Well, I think you were asking whether it was a volunteer, to which no, it's absolutely compulsory. Everybody in the United States would have to enter into this program under pain of death. But no.
It's like the draft, but for fucking fixing things instead of like fighting wars.
Right. Yeah, exactly. No, of course it would be volunteer, but like, you know, it would be one of those things where it's like you would be committing to a certain amount of time every month. It could be like an hour a month if that's all you wanted to put in. It could be an hour up to, I don't know, like 2 weeks if you were independently wealthy and could swing that. And then you would just kind of be sent based on this algorithm of who needs help, who needs what. You'd be sent by algorithm to places that needed your help.
Right.
Anyway.
It's a good idea, but that would require people like getting off the couch, and that's like, you know, it's
true.
One thing to like get on your Facebook and get on your high horse, but it's another thing to actually like ride the horse, you know?
So do you think that people actually enjoy like being in despair and like just being pissed off about shit and feeling impotent and hopeless?
I don't know if they actually enjoy it, but I think it's just like human nature, and it's a lot easier to like, I feel like the inclination that is kind of built into people is that like to be unhappy and to be in despair, and like being happy or you know, working on that thing, working on getting off of those feelings and thoughts takes effort.
Yeah.
You know, it takes effort to be good, and it takes no effort to be shitty.
Yeah. That's true. That is true.
That's... And I think like it's crazy though, because you know, people, the easiest thing I think would be to like do nothing, right? So like, and I mean this like in a social sense of like, people want to like make it so gay people can't get married, say, you know,
right?
And it's like the easiest thing in the world is to just like do nothing. If people want to get married to each other, like who gives a shit? Do nothing, and you know, so like, there's people who are actually actively working at being shittier by saying, no, you can't do things, you know, to other people. As long as it doesn't hurt somebody, like, who gives a fuck what anyone does at all?
Right, right. And I think, yeah, I think that it's really, I think that's a really, really good point. And I feel like that's kind of where I'm at actually with social media in general, just like doing nothing, you know, or just posting like something like short and nice because, I think that it's important to just kind of like live in the real world and read books. I've been enjoying Philip K. Dick lately. I've been trying to go through that whole catalog and J.G. Ballard and stuff like that. So it's just like, you know, and then I started, oh man, check this out. The weirdest shit happened when I decided to like kind of get off Facebook and not really post that much anymore. I had this thought. I had this really funny like idea. It was like a snarky comment. I can't remember exactly what it was. So I went there and I was going to type it in, and then all of a sudden, like, all of the words in the message box got all jumbled up. Just out of, like, it just, and then my cursor went from the end of the sentence to the very middle of the sentence. So it was like every time I would try to start typing, it would move me to the middle of the sentence and I'd start typing in the middle. And I was like, whoa, this is a fucking sign. Like, something up there is just like, it's like scrambling it for me, you know?
Like, it's like, you're not allowed to joke on Facebook anymore.
Right.
Share that Donald Trump, you know, thing from The Guardian or whatever.
Right. Or just basically like something telling me to get the fuck off of it, you know?
Yeah.
Just go do something else, dude.
See, I think I have I know you talk about this on the show a lot too, but I have a generally I think Facebook is like fun.
Yeah.
Like I enjoy being on there. It's funny. I mean, you know, I just started was railing against people sharing shitty things, but like I really don't pay attention to it. Like it's basically just fucking water under, you know, flowing by me.
Yeah.
And I just kind of stand there and I make my post, which is usually some sort of joke or observation about something. And then I just let everybody comment on my thing. And then I just continue with it. And then I don't have to like deal with anybody else's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I'm the fucking star of the show right here. This is my show and you're all invited to be a part of it if you want. And it's like, and I don't really want to go to your show, or I don't have to if I don't want to.
Right.
Like I see it's going on over there, but I'm not going to walk over there. You know, like
that's a really cool. Good way of putting it, man. Do you think that that comes from growing up in like an urban environment where people are like, go fuck yourself on this? Like eventually you're just like, whatever. I'm doing my thing. I don't give a shit.
I mean, it could be. I never thought of that as that being like something that would affect me, like on this level of like, oh, we're all on the computer together. but yeah, I guess in a way, you know, you just when you have a lot of people around you, you get really good at ignoring most of them.
Yeah.
But you have to.
Maybe that's the thing. Like, maybe I just need to, like, work on, like, exposure therapy. Like, go deep into Twitter and get just, you know, the shakes from, you know, all the just inundation of fucking negativity and bullshit. And then, like, just live in it for a second. Like, just don't avoid it. Don't do anything. Just, like, swim in that bullshit. Just be like, yeah.
Well, Twitter is kind of work. Like, I know it's just this, like, constant stream. But, mm-hmm. like, they kind of, like... they kind of like curate what you see a little bit at the top, right? So when you first go on Twitter, it'll be like, you may have missed or you might like, and it's just a couple of the people that you interact with the most.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is nice. And I never really go much further than like the top five things that are on the Twitter page. Cause I'm like, well, once I get past the four people I interact with, I'm going to end up into like, you know, especially with writers and people that you network with professionally, like it's just fucking buy my book links over and over again, or
yeah,
like
yeah,
you know, people on Twitter use those image macros and it's always some like picture of a wolf and
hell yeah, dude,
something
I love
stupid
the,
and it's like,
I love the wolf pictures, man. You know why? It's because wolves, they move in packs, but they're also loners. You can be a lone wolf, but you also are a pack, right? You see where I'm going with that? Me neither.
Oh, so we all relate to wolves.
That's,
I guess,
true. Yeah, we're actually writers are descended from wolves. The wolf is our animal of choice. No, man, I get you. But now that brings up an interesting point, you know, because you're saying like, you know, I don't want to buy the dumb book, and I'm totally with you, man. Like, that's actually why I started reading Philip K. Dick, because I truly like this. This is what this podcast is pretty much all about. It's like talking to indie writers and stuff, but I think I just needed a break from the small press indie scene for a while because it was just kind of, it's getting to be kind of a lot. So I just wanted to like take one writer and just read that writer for like 4 months just as a change of pace. But I mean, it brings up an interesting point because, you know, everybody obviously wants to sell their books. So I feel like you have kind of an interesting approach to how you sell books, and perhaps maybe a little bit more entertaining. So give me your philosophy of how you sell books.
Well, I don't sell books. I sell me.
Right.
Like, I'm not trying to sell anybody my book. I mean, I am, you know, and everyone listening to this should definitely go on Amazon and buy every single one of my books, but I'm not going out there and trying to like just be like, you need this in your life. It's like, no, I'm trying to add value to people's lives by, I don't know, making being entertaining, you know, being, there's like an inherent value, I think, to just being entertained. And you know, when I go out and like, I'll do like readings and stuff around town, but I don't actually ever read. I just like, I'll go up and do kind of like comedy bits, I guess, but it's not like stand-up comedy. It's more like performance comedy. And I don't know if people are entertained by that. Like, I'm like, maybe they'll like what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, with the books. Although my books are usually a lot more serious than
right. So how does that connect? Me. Like, how does that connect? Like, it's just, it's I guess it's kind of selling, like the person, you know, which I think is more important. I don't really necessarily think people are typically very interested in things like, well, you know what? Maybe big audiences are interested in like plot and stuff like that. But most people, I think, just like, these days they get attached to personalities and they want to see what comes out of that person's brain, no matter what it is.
Right. I remember you were, I think it was your show with Tiffany, with Tiffany Scandal. And you guys were talking about, fucking something about like having 1,000 fans and making $100 worth of, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
it was
if you have
a certain amount of fans and you come up with a certain amount of stuff for them to buy, you can kind of build this life out of not having a gigantic audience,
yep.
You know?
Yep.
And I really liked that discussion, and I've been kind of like, I mean, I was conducting myself, I think, in that way, trying to work towards that before. But once I heard that, it kind of gave me even better idea of what I should be doing.
Right. And I think one of the main things, right, is like specialization, maybe. I mean, I think one of the biggest problems, man, and I'm sorry, I'm going to use a super ugly word, but my problem with my brand is that it's not like consistent. Right. I feel like it's whatever I feel at a certain point. But I'll see people who manage to hit the same beats every time, you know, and they're always right. That person you can go to. Like if you want to know about sports, you go to this guy, or you want. And like for me, I'm like, I don't know. Like right now I'm really interested in like reading books about near-death experiences and also Philip K. Dick. So like that's what you're going to get from me. That's my fucking output. Right.
Right.
But
there's a certain amount of realness to that. If that is your, like you said, brand, like your brand is just being real, is being JDO, you know, like yeah. What else can you do?
Yeah. Hopefully I don't become super racist. That'll be bad for the brand. It's like,
I think
hey,
as you get older, it's inevitable. You just become more racist until you're like 80 and you're just like complaining about everyone.
It was funny. I was booking a guest the other day and I was like, all right, cool. So we're all set. We got the times get set up and everything. And I was like, well, I hope I'm taking the podcast. I was fucking with him, seeing what he would say. I was like, I'm trying to take it kind of like more in like an alt-right direction, right? So I was wondering if we could like maybe get a little racist. And he was like, I don't know, dude. And then he was like, he was joking about it. He was like, so I guess I could be racist against Italians. And I was like, oh, perfect. Yes. Are you talking about spaghetti heads? Yeah, let's go that way. Yeah. Right? But no, so basically,
you know, if you got to be racist, I'd say against Italians is probably one of the safest one of the safest races you could probably direct that towards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's because nobody has ever owned stereotypes quite like the Italians have. You know what I mean? They're like, oh yeah, no, like we'll go. Especially when you see like, I don't know. I get, man, now I'm embarrassed because I'm thinking of like stuff I've fucking seen on TV and I'm like, that's not real life, David, but like Jersey Shore and shit like that.
Well, those people exist, but it's funny about Jersey Shore, because when I moved to those people don't exist here in Portland. Like right, people right. who act and look like that are just not existing here. But there's like this other kind of thing that doesn't exist on the East Coast, which is like these kind of like trust fund hippies that are like all over fucking Portland. Like it's like this kind of like yoga-y, like, but not like hippies like they want to go eat granola and like right, live right. a tree. It's like this like weird like Burning Man-esque like
yep.
version of hippie. And like it's basically like they took all the fucking Jersey Shore people and just replaced them with those.
You're
so like
totally
as many of those as you find out here, that's how many of those like fucking, you know, greased up like meathead guys that you have on the fucking Jersey Shore.
Dude, that's so funny that you say that, because you're totally right. I take it back about Italians. It's actually like those white people in Portland, they own their stereotypes so fucking hard. Like they love it. You know, it's so, that's so funny, man. Yep. And it's true. It's true. It's totally true. I, even like, and it's always, you ever notice that like, it feels like the bohemian artist type people, and then there's like an intersection with like incredibly wealthy people. Like they have like very similar habits when it comes to stuff like that. And then there's this whole people in the middle who are just kind of like, I don't know. I don't give a shit. Like I work at, you know, or like where, like, I feel like I'm kind of like in the middle, right, where I work. And I'm just like, I don't really care about anything that you guys care about.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Yeah, I don't know. I've worked a couple of these weird events. I do security work sometimes. And I've worked these, like, outdoor, like, hippie festivals where it's, like, I don't know. Like, I can't even describe. It's, like, camping in tents, and there's all this music playing. And everybody's like getting up at six and doing yoga or like just tripping out for fucking 4 straight days. And like,
Hell yeah, dude.
you know, this girl showed up and she's like, you know, my job was to like run the door, not the door. It was like the road, the end of the road, to make sure people driving in had their wristbands on. And so it was like really an easy job. I was sitting there reading a book for most of the fucking weekend. But, you know, this girl shows up and she's just like, I don't have a wristband. And I'm like, well, then you have to like go back and get one from the ticketing booth. And she's like, no, the goddess told me that I have to come here. She's like, you know, I had this divine kind of thing and I wanted to get here. And I was, and it's like, and you know, I'm like, everybody else got a wristband. You have to go get a wristband. Like, if the goddess should have directed you to the ticket booth, you know? And it's like, I don't know. There's this weird, like she was not taking no for an answer. Like, she parked her car in the road and was blocking everybody else. And this person was just kind of crazy. And she just, I didn't know what to do with this. I'm just like, there's this weird entitlement to like what she thought she deserved. And I'm like, and I personally hate doing security work because I don't feel like being that person who tells people yes or no on things or tries to make them follow the rules because I normally don't give a shit. And if I wasn't there getting paid to do this job, like, or, you know, I would just been like, whatever, go to fucking side. I don't care. You know?
Exactly.
But I don't know, man. But like, and that mentality that she had, like, I mean, she's the one who didn't have a ticket, but like, everybody in this place was like that. You know, they all thought like that they were like had something really special. I mean, and people do. People, everybody has something special, but like, I don't know.
Do
I
you think
can't even
so?
explain this
Do you think
talking
so?
people, but that everybody has someone special,
I
has
don't think
something
that's
special.
true.
I'd like to think that's true.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know. Saddam Hussein?
I mean, he was a leader of men. He had a real special mustache, dude.
He did. No, man, that's true. You know, what's so funny too is that like that yeah, that's kind of like the disease though of of just kind of positioning yourself as like a as like the main character, not just of your like, everybody's obviously the main character of their story. That's why they are them, but a lot of people forget that like that doesn't mean that you're the main character of literally anybody else's story at all, right? And there's just like that kind of stunning lack of awareness. It just I don't know. It'll drive me crazy if I focus on it too much, but I do like hippies though, man. I like all that kind of like 'cause I like talking to them because the way that you kind of talk to those people is like you meet them on their terms, right? And you're like, oh my, like if she was like, no, the goddess told me, you'd be like, oh wow, that is far out. That is so cool. And I'll tell you what, I love that you want to come in here, but just before you do that, here, just take here 20 seconds over here. You know what I mean? So like, you're just like, you're basically like soothing that crazy bit, right? And just kind of like gently nudging over.
This is why I was terrible at doing security, because that's the way you need to act to people, especially here on the left coast. Like, you know, you have to be kind of gentle with people. And like, I don't want to be there doing my stupid job. So I'm just like being, you know, I'm just like, nope, go, get out of here, go, don't care. You know, like I don't have time for you and whatever the hell this is that's happening.
Well, that's just
Which
that's
ironic, because all I did is have time. Like, you know, I'm sitting at the end of a road for 12 hours a day reading a book. Like, clearly we could have done this for 5 hours and it would have
I'm in the
not been
middle
a
of
like
something.
but like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, no, I
There's
get you. That just comes from me. I worked in a bar slash hot dog place for 3 years, and having to deal with entitled ass frat bros for 3 years, you just learn how you have to just meet them on their terms. You know what I mean? They're like, it's like, what are you guys out here doing tonight? And they're like, oh, we're out here crushing pussy, and you're just like, hell yeah, dude, crush it, mash it. Fucking beat it up. I don't whatever other I metaphor I could think of. But then once they like you, then you could be like, hey man, I know you guys are having a good time, but maybe like don't pour out all the ketchup onto the table. And they're like, oh, bro, sorry. I was just thinking about pussy so much. I just couldn't help myself. I just started pouring out all the ketchup. And it's like, I get you. I understand. But don't pour the ketchup all over the table.
And then, I got so excited about pussy. I just squirted ketchup. Bro.
Dude, they love pussy, man. They love pussy.
I think you would be a good security guard.
Probably. I mean, I'm too small for that. I mean, well, I guess you're a skinny guy too.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, you don't really have to like bounce people around here. You just kind of like gently tell them where they need to go. And that kind of like, I could not be a security guard in New York because you need to be 300 pounds and 6'5". And you actually have to like physically, you know,
toss people.
Get people out of places. But here, people are a lot more laid back, so you just got to kind of be nice and friendly and ask them to do things, and they usually just do it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or they do that thing where they do it and they're like, oh yeah, sure, I'll do that right now. And it's like, okay, whatever, all right.
Yeah, I wasn't very good at it though. Yeah, I can't.
So is that what you've been doing mostly, is like kind of odd jobs, or do you have like a regular gig?
I've been driving for Amazon Flex.
Whoa, what's that like?
It's the Flex program is basically people who have Prime Now, when they order something and they want it in an hour or 2 hours.
What?
Amazon, like, so you can go on Amazon if you have Prime Now, which, yeah, I guess you pay X amount of dollars a year for.
Right.
Like, you go and you buy your headphones on Prime Now, I'll be at your house in an hour with your headphones.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Is that like extra?
Oh, I'm assuming. I don't know what people actually pay, but so essentially you go on this app, you sign up for it. Now go on this app and the hours will pop up throughout the day. It'll be like 2 to 4 or 4 to 7. And you just take them if you want them. And then you're basically on call for Amazon for those 4 hours or 3 hours or 2 hours or whatever. You go to either the warehouse or a waiting spot, which is usually just a street corner somewhere. And you just sit in your car and then the app will just tell you what to pick up from where. And then I just go and drive it to people's houses.
That is absolutely
bizarre. And I'll do groceries and do restaurants too. So for Amazon, it would be either stuff from the warehouse, groceries, or restaurants.
That is fucking nuts, man. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's
they pay me pretty well to do this though. And then they also, you get tips on top of it. So it ends up being like, I'll just work 2 or 3 hours a day and I'll just do it every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm making enough to kind of support myself just doing that right now.
That's badass, man. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
It's cool because, you know, I write and I want to spend a lot of time working on my writing. And if you're tired or work a lot, it's hard to do that. But this kind of job is kind of allowing me to, you know, I'll wake up and I'll write for an hour or two in the morning, and then I'll eat lunch, and then I'll be like, oh, let me work a few hours.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'll work a few hours and I'll come home and watch a movie with my girlfriend. And that's like a normal day.
Right on. Cool. Yeah. Oh, how is Lisa, by the way? Is she good?
Yeah, she's doing pretty good. She actually started driving for Amazon too.
Oh, wow, that's so cool.
Ago, because I've been doing making much extra money doing it. So
she has a full time job, right?
She does security at the Bossa Nova Ballroom in town here, which is how I started doing security, because that was her job, and she kind of got me. When I first moved to Portland, you know, I needed some work, and that was the first thing that kind of fell in my lap.
Sure, sure, sure. Well, that's badass, man. Yeah, that's cool. And you guys have your own podcast, right?
Yeah, it's kind of on hiatus right now.
Oh, okay. So,
but yeah, it was just basically us bullshitting the podcast.
Right on.
It's basically me saying gross things and Lisa being horrified at me.
That's kind of y'all's life though, right? Like, isn't that that's just how I picture your day-to-day interaction.
It is. I'm usually saying something very overtly sexual, and she's just like, you need to stop. And then I'm like, let's just record this for an hour because that's what people need want to hear, I
just
guess.
Danger being like, I want to sniff your butthole. And then she's like, ew, gross. And he's like, I want to.
Yeah. She kind of just rolls with it at this point. I think she realizes it's a fucking lost cause. She's like, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, sniff my butthole.
Isn't it great when we meet people who can fucking put up with us? It's so great, dude.
Oh, yeah, man. It's like, I don't know how people could be in a relationship or be married to someone who doesn't accept, like, that kind of weirdness that they have to offer.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think you just have to meet somebody who's equally... Because, I mean, Rios is just... She is profoundly strange. She is a deeply strange person. Like, she's not... She's not, like, insane, right? But, and you know, maybe this is other people when you get to know them really, really well, too. But, I mean, like, Rios has quirks, right? It's kind of what I like to say, you know? And I think that, like, one of the reasons why people like her so much is because she pretty much wears those quirks, like, out in the open, you know? Like, you know what you're getting when you meet Rios. She's very... I guess it's just... You need somebody like that because she and I can just both say like the most bizarre shit to each other and we like get it, you know?
Right.
I couldn't like walk around the apartment and make up a song about, you know, how I'm going to smother my dog with a pillow and like have people think that that's normal. But Rios is just like, well, don't smother her, but then she'll like add a verse to the song or something like that. It's a beautiful synergy going on there.
Yeah, this is like one of the few times in my life I've actually been in a long-term relationship. So it's they're few and far between finding that right person who can kind of like complement your weirdness or all your quirks in the right way.
So wait, was Tinder out before you met Lisa?
It was.
Did you use it?
I've used Tinder. Yeah.
Did you ever crush puss on Tinder?
I wouldn't use those terms, but I essentially, yeah.
I was bringing it back to the frat guys. Anyway,
I'm fucking swiping my Tinder, squirting ketchup all over the place, being like,
yeah,
I'm gonna crush so much puss tonight.
It's so gross. I like it because it's gross, you know, but it's also real. It's what it is. I wonder if like women say shit like that, you know, they're just going to be like, I'm going to squirt on some dick tonight, you know.
Dude, I want to believe in a world where that does exist. So
there's somebody I follow on Twitter. It's like at, I think, One Punch Pussy or something. And this is a woman who just like all of her tweets are just like, man, I need some dick. And she's like, I love sucking on dick. And you know what? But she's being real. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, it's her thing. And I'm like, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. It's like, it makes me happy. It's like positive, because she does a lot of positive reinforcement stuff too. You know, and it's like, you know, you're great, you're awesome. But then it's also, you know, just stuff like that. It's just like, oh man, when I get torn up, it's so great. And I'm like, oh, it is great, man. Sex positivity. I'm all for sex positivity.
It's like that. Did you ever watch that show Broad City? On Comedy Central.
Oh man, I've seen a few episodes and I loved them, but it's one of those ones that, you know, whenever you watch something you're like, that was great, and then you never watch it again.
Yeah,
that was Broad City for me.
Oh man, I love that show though. That's essentially what the show is. It's just these two girls in New York, and they're like super normal. Like, not super normal, they're weird, but like, that's, they're, you don't see women being portrayed at like taking shits and talking on the phone to each other. Sure. Like, it's not, and it's not like part of the joke, but that's what they're doing in the show. You know, like,
yeah. That's badass, man.
It's a fucking funny show too. Those two girls are crazy.
Yeah. I need to catch up on that show. Yeah. Cause it was one of those where I like sitcoms, man. I like Workaholics a lot. Like, that's one of my favorites.
It's ironic because that is what you just said about Broad City is how I feel about Workaholic.
Oh, really?
Where I was like, oh, this is funny. But then I just like never watched it.
Yeah. It's so weird how that happens, man. I think it's just because there's so much shit out there, you know? But yeah, I kind of wanted to switch gears for like the last little segment here and just like, I'm trying to do this more often now and give you an opportunity. Are you working on anything new? And is there anything that you kind of want to plug?
Oh, okay. I can do this. I just finished a book. So hopefully that'll come out this year. And I mean, I'm continuously working on stuff. So I had started another one already before I even finish, like before this one comes out. And I just want to have like shit out like nonstop, like one after another, if possible. It's hard though, because I when I'm writing, I hold kind of myself to a really high standard as far as like the mechanics of my words and what they look like and what they feel like when I'm getting them out. So it's a very like arduous process. So I can't be the type of writer that is going to be able to drop something like how Carlton Mellick has one that comes out every 3 months, a new book, and they're like good books too. Like I'm just
They're
like, but
good
I'm like,
books. They're good books, but I do think I've praised Carl so much on this show because I fucking love his work ethic. But I mean, to also be realistic about it, I mean, they're great books, but he's not a prose stylist, right? Like
right.
he's not sitting there writing like poetry with his words. Like it is very, it's directly what he's thinking onto the page, which is totally fine. That's a way to write books. It's actually it's entertaining to read, but there's a difference between doing that and like trying to find the exact rhythm, which is what I think you and I probably do a little bit more, right? Like we're concerned with like the rhythm of the sentences and how they line up and what's extra, what doesn't need to be there, what needs to be
Yeah.
there. And I do think Carl is more like, I'm just gonna write this fucking thing. And it totally works, but it's
Right.
different.
Right. But he still like deals with really big ideas and concepts. And I mean, it's very his he'll have a high concept story where it's just like, oh, this is a person who has some weird thing, their fucking head is made out of cheese or whatever. But like that's not what the story's about. That's just incidental almost, and the story's about some big idea. It could be about like, loss or growing up or whatever the case may be. So he really does get a lot out in that kind of, I don't want to say he's got a minimalist style, but like you said, not a very ornate way with
It's
his words.
straightforward, is what it
Yeah.
is. Yeah.
But it's good because you can read something like that and not like it's not taxing on you to read. So you get the whole story and it comes very quickly and easily. And even though he's writing about something super weird, you can like see it very easily in your head because there's no and it happens to me too when I write, and I try to work. I actually try to use less metaphors when I'm writing, because I see myself getting into these like I'll start describing the color of the sky, and then it could end up four sentences about what the fucking sky looks like. It's like, no, nah, dude, just say the sky's blue. Like it doesn't fu you know like it doesn't you don't need f five sentences saying the fucking sky is like a big cerulean blanket laid across the fucking firmament or whatever the fuck. Like it's just, and I as I try to be a better writer, am trying to make myself get less, like make the still have style, but like I don't know, use it more effectively and not so much like a scattershot of like now everything is being described as metaphors and is all these are ornate words or whatever. People just want the story. They don't fucking care
No,
about that.
it's totally true, dude. And that's what I've been trying to do also, man. It's like I kind of went like the other way, and I was always been obsessed with like what can I take out, you know, how small can I make it? And eventually I was like the process of doing this is a little exhausting. And so I'm kind of interested in just like leaving a little bit more stuff that I'm not entirely happy with in, you know, and just like becoming comfortable with that because it's like I don't know, man. I have three books where I use that method. And so if I write stuff for the rest of my life and it's not like completely up to those standards. I have those books, right? But I'm interested right. in trying so many different things that I can't like get bogged down with this stylistic tick that I have. So I've been slowly but surely, like, it's almost like the opposite. It's like, instead of, you know, just like not even putting in that the sky is blue, but just like the word sky, it's like, okay, like, no, you can say the sky is blue. It's like, so I have to kind of move the other way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I've been rereading a lot of Kurt Vonnegut's work. Kurt Vonnegut is like my main favorite author, right? Like, yeah. If someone asks me who my favorite author is, that's who I say. I've read all these books, but I read them all when I was 19, 20, like, because that's when I discovered them. And yeah. then I got super into it. You know, this is one of the reasons why I wanted to write, is because I read Kurt Vonnegut and liked it so much. So now I'm in almost my mid-30s, and I was like, you know what? I haven't read any of these books in like 15 years. You know, like, maybe this is time to start revisiting them.
Right.
And I've reread about 7 of them so far. And like, he kind of walks that fine line in between those two ways of kind of coming at it, right? His prose is very to the point, but the way he tells stories is in this weird, complex way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, like, he has an idea. And then instead of like, just like, you know, going chronologically and like, here's the progression toward the end, it's like, no, you know, right in the beginning of the book, he'll be like, here's the end of the book. And he's like, we're going to be jumping around from all these different events that are kind of orbiting around that main
right.
ending,
right?
You know, exactly. And that's the way the story happens. And I mean, it's very much, you know, if you read a Vonnegut story, you're like, oh, that's very Vonnegut. Like, it's very much the way he does that, kind of in the way he does it. But I'm trying to take I'm trying to make my prose have that kind of lean kind of bite to it, the way his does too. You know, mm-hmm, it's something mm-hmm. that I'm continuously working on. Yeah, you know, I'll go back and even read a book that I wrote like last year, like the one that I Will Rot Without You, which is that came out in February last year.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a couple of paragraphs where I'm just like, I fucking hate this. Like, I'm like, why did I?
Oh, dude.
Why does it say it like this? Like, why did I do this? Like, all I need to say was one simple thing.
Dude, you know? No, I mean, it's totally, and it's like, you know, and that's, you bring up an extremely, extremely good point. And the point is to why writing books the way Carl does might actually be the smartest way to do it. I said probably like 4 minutes ago that, you know, I wrote these 3 books that I wrote in exactly the way that I wanted them to and blah, blah, blah. But yet, if I were to open it, I have a copy of Blackham right here, and I could open it to any page and read any line and be like, wrong, 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 wrong. So it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? So I think that like, there's this difference between our personal standards that we have for what we think is good and what is actually good, and kind of learning the difference between. And I think just like entertaining, that's the number right. one thing. Did you just write a sentence that was fun in one way or another? And there's no really like, there's many ways to be fun. It could be fun because you dropped a kick-ass metaphor, or it could be fun because you hit a real good rhythm that kind of flowed along, or it could be entertaining because it moves you on to the next sentence, or it could be right. entertaining because it has a joke in it. So there's a bunch of different things you can do. And I think that maybe what somebody like Vonnegut does so well is knows when to switch. You know, it's like, all right, I've been funny and short and brief. It's like knowing when to put a guitar solo in a song, or, you know, knowing when to kind of change things up in order to keep the audience's attention. Like, right. I think that one of the reasons, to kind of go back when I said I was a little burned out on indie books, is that I was starting to feel like people's voices don't necessarily sound the same, but they sound the same within the context of the book, right? And I think that's maybe what separates like the really great writers from just the really, really good writers, is the ability to, it's almost like with bands, you know, like a band will become like extremely good at one thing, and they'll put out album after album of that one thing. And if you're into that one thing, that band is your everything. But
right.
They don't appeal widely because they hit the same note over and over again. And I think that that's a lot of the problem that I have with a lot of the stuff that I've been reading lately, is that it doesn't, within the text itself, within like the work itself, it doesn't shift enough. Like, it's not giving me a wide range of emotion and feeling. It's normally very much one particular tone.
And you're talking about when you take in the, like, somebody's complete works, not just the specific novel, or are you talking about like, if you're like, you know, you're reading this author and they don't change it up enough?
Well, yeah, let me, well, for example, okay, so I could pick up a book off my shelf right now. This is a book that I read a while back. It's called The Crystal Eaters by Shane Jones, right? And this is just me picking a book at random, right?
Okay.
And it's about, what the hell? This one was like where people had, where people have like life bars. They have like a certain amount of crystals, and then when they lose all the crystals, they die. I'm remembering this correctly. My memory is shit. Anyhow. But this is a really good example of a book that has really, like, Shane Jones is super, super good at writing. Like, his writing is on point, right? But throughout the whole book, it maintains this kind of magical realist sort of consistent tone. And by the end of it, I was just, like, ready for it to be over. I can remember that very specifically about that book. And
now is this an indie book, or is this, like, something?
It's a $2 radio book.
I feel like longer works sometimes will suffer from that, though, which is why things that, like, if something's over 200 pages, like, I'm very wary of picking it up because I'm like, this motherfucker better not waste my time. You know, like.
Yeah. But I think that, like, okay, so I could use another $2 radio book, like Crapalacha by Scott McClanahan, as an example of the opposite. And, like, that book swings between this extremely poetic, kind of almost beautiful voice, to slapstick humor, to incredibly dark humor, to some real depressing shit, back up. Like, it has these peaks and valleys. You see what I'm saying? And I just feel like a lot of books sort of, like, they don't understand how to vary their tone to stay interesting. Movies, too. I mean, I have the same problem with movies.
Right. Yeah. Definitely with movies. Because there's these slow burner movies, right? They're just like really like perfectly like that movie The Witch that came out last year.
Yeah.
Like my initial, everybody loved that movie, but my initial reaction was like, yeah, this is so boring. Like this movie, and if I had known ahead of time, like maybe that's what this was going to be, I would have been able to prepare myself mentally for it. But I'm sitting in the theater like, when the fuck is something going to happen? Like, I can't even understand what these people are saying. Like, and they're just sitting around, like, doing nothing. Like, I mean, the ending was cool. But, like, still, like, it was too much of the same note over and over again.
You know what's so funny,
it got to the good point, like, I already didn't care.
You're the only person I think I've talked to who didn't like The Witch. I thought I was alone in that. So, that's pretty cool.
I've had people yell at me. Like, fucking MP Johnson like yelled at me last year because we were at a table together at a convention. He's just like, what do you like? And because there was some other stupid movie that everybody liked that I didn't tell.
No, The Witch was trash. It was really bad. And I think you nailed it why it was bad. You know, I mean, I guess if you like living in that universe, I guess that's the key, right? Is like the difference between universal appeal and very like niche appeal. Is that if you create this kind of universe and people like living in it, then there's no problems. Like, you have The Witch. Right. But, like, for everybody else who, like, I'm not interested in Puritan New England, and I'm not particularly interested in witch stories. So there would have to be something else, something varied in it that would keep me interested. I was interested at the beginning when the witch is, like, grinding up the baby and shit. Like, that was pretty cool.
Right.
And then there's this huge part in the middle that's just like these annoying ass kids and like a goat, and then like this woman who's like, everybody's going crazy, and then the pops gets killed by the goat, spoiler alert, and then she's like a witch. That's it. That's all that happens in that fucking movie.
I mean, you pretty much know there's a witch involved at some point. And then when you're like, So it's not that big of a spoiler.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like when you're an hour into the movie and you're like, there's no witches. You're like, there's going to have to be a witch at some point, right? It's called The Witch.
Yeah, they couldn't just call it like the paranoid Puritans or whatever, but so they had the
Vitch.
What a fucking trash movie.
Yeah, I think like when it comes to movies and books too, what I look for, and even music, like to a degree, but what I look for and what attracts me to something is an element of giving me something I didn't expect.
Yeah.
You know, like art that keeps making left turns. And when I get up and perform and like the kind of performances I like to give, like my version of comedy or being funny is very much like make it so I'm always going left, you know, make it so people can't predict where this is going to end or land, you know? And I think that's what kind of keeps people compelled to like, once they realize that this is going to keep happening, they're like, oh, I need to, like, I want to see what this is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's like the basis of like all comedy, right? Like, it's just the unexpected. That's pretty much what comedy is, saying something unexpected.
Well, yes, but there, I mean, when you start getting into like broad comedy, like broad as in stuff made for audiences with wide appeal, it's like, you know, like when you're in like Adam Sandler territory and it's like, oh, that horse like kicked somebody, like that's which is funny, you know, people falling down and getting hurt to a degree, but like you know it's gonna happen.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, you know, at some point Adam Sandler is gonna like say some dumb thing, and then this horse is gonna kick someone, and then someone will probably fart, and then the movie's gonna be over. You're like, oh great. But then there's certain like comedies, like my like one of my favorite movies of all time is that movie Super, starring Rainn Wilson. It was written and directed by James Gunn.
Yeah, I
like
thought
before.
That one was pretty good. Yeah,
like, and there's so much like it's funny, but it's also really sad, and you don't quite know like where it's going. And then the ending is so like dark, you're just like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
And there's just something about that like really kind of speaks to me and how I want to create things. And I'm not saying I want to make things that are super dark or mimicking that, but there's something about the construction of it that I'm just like, I like this.
Well, yeah, where you're like kind of where you're, oh man, I don't know if enough people have seen it yet, so I'm not going to talk about a certain movie, but there are other ways you can also like have a dark movie with like a happy ending too. It's all about like what you said. It's like, does it feel right? And is it also kind of a surprise? Right.
Right.
If it's just somebody starts off in a fucking toilet and then they end up in a toilet, it's like, okay. Like, that's why I don't want to watch fucking Manchester by the Sea. You know, that movie just seems like a bummer from beginning to end. It's like sad guy.
Toilet. I was like, what?
No, like but you, I don't know, I just don't want to watch like that one note, like this movie is going to make you super sad, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to feel like if you're gonna make me super sad, you have to make me happy through at least half of it. That's the and vice versa, you know, if you're gonna make me happy through it, like you have to give me a little bit of like something to get through to become happy, right? So yeah, it's just like being varied and stuff like that, I guess.
Well, you need to like earn that too. Like as the person making the movie or writing the book or telling the story or whatever, like if you're going to try to like wallop somebody with an ending that is going to be like a huge bummer, like you have to earn that, because it's like not fair to have to like, I don't know. You know, like if you're watching some shitty movie and then like fucking it's some like romantic comedy, not romantic comedy, like The Notebook or something, and then like Rachel McAdams dies or whatever. I don't know if that's what happens in that movie. I've never seen it, but you know what I'm getting at. Like, like you have to fucking earn that from your audience. Like nobody wants to. I guess people do want to see it. I don't want to see it though. I don't want to be fucking bummed out for no reason.
Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, I think that's the same point that I'm at. I love being freaked out, and I love being bummed out, and I love. But I don't like it when somebody's like rubbing their hands together and it's like, I'm going to make you so sad, or I'm going to make you so scared. It's like, come on, give me a break, dude. I just put something out that's entertaining. And if that's the side effect of it, then cool. I don't know.
It's weird too, though, because like sometimes I don't think endings are even that important as like the tone of the ending. Like the very specifics of it aren't as important, because there's so many times where I don't remember how books or movies end. Like I can pretty much name how, or I can pretty much tell you how every book I've ever read or every movie I've ever seen starts, but I could probably only remember half the endings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'll still know if I liked the movie or not. You know, and yeah, I feel like, because I'll remember the way that it made me feel more than the actual events that happened.
Right.
So if you're going to like try and make me feel some way, like it better not be like, fuck you for doing this.
Right.
Like,
right.
Because exactly. That's what's going to leave me with if it's not good, or if it's just trying to be like you said, bringing its hands together of like to make you feel something.
Well, sir, I kept you over time. I appreciate your time and for coming on the JDO Show Ultra Podcast Extravaganza. I'm working on the title still, but
it's pretty good though. It sounds very exciting.
Thanks, man. I'll talk about your books a little bit in the intro, and yeah, man. We should get a beer sometime.
Yeah, dude.
I'll hit you up when it's beer time.
It's always beer time for me. So.
Oh, right on. Well, yeah. Enjoy that.
I'm one of those people. All right, man.
Hell yeah. Thanks a lot, dude.
All right, dude.
I appreciate it. Bye-bye.